Roller coasters. People either love them or hate them. If you love them, this will sound like a lot of fun.
Here we actually have several feet of straight track at the top of the loop. So you essentially have some extended hang time while you're upside down. So you really get to savor it.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Last week, Adventureland in Altoona made a big announcement. The log ride is out, and as of next year, a new extreme roller coaster called the Monster is in. We'll get the lowdown on the new roller coaster, talk about the business of roller coasters with Tom Schreier, who studies amusement parks and theme parks. Then later on, the psychology of roller coasters. Why do some people love them so much? Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Last week, news broke that Adventureland in Altoona is making a big investment in a new roller coaster. It's called the Monster. It costs $9 million and is slated to open in 2016. This hour, we'll find out about this new roller coaster, explore the business of theme parks and amusement parks, and also talk about the psychology of roller coasters. What makes them so much fun for some of us and so terrifying for others. But first, let's talk about the Monster. Molly Vincent is a spokesperson for Adventureland Park. Hello, Molly.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, tell me what sparked this decision. What was it that made Adventureland start thinking about investing in a new roller coaster?
Well, we had been thinking about it for quite some time. The last roller coaster we actually put into Adventureland was way back in 1993, and that was the Outlaw. So, at, you know, 20-plus years ago, we were probably more than due. But really what sparked this was the retirement of our old log ride. It's about 40 years old and has just seen better days. Rides don't last forever, unfortunately. So,
well, and there has been quite an outcry about the log ride going away. It seems to be a lot of people's favorite ride. Why does the log ride have to go?
Well, let me give you a little bit of history on it, and I think you'll see for yourself. The company we bought the log ride from back in 1974 was called Divitron, and they made exactly two of these. And the other one was purchased by a place in the Midwest that no one can really remember now who had it, but it ran until about 20 years ago when theirs stopped working. So we purchased all the salvageable parts and pieces from theirs and kept ours going for another 20 years. But that is truly the end of its life. This September 7th, Labor Day, will be the last weekend for the log ride. And it's one of those things where, unfortunately, rides just truly don't last forever.
And what was the last ride you had to retire?
The last ride that, well, we didn't get to retire the Silly Silo, unfortunately. It just stopped working. But the Silly Silo in 2013, in August 2013, just kind of stopped. And it was one of those things where it was an old rotor ride that spun you around and stuck you to the side of the walls. And hundreds of thousands of rotations later, it had seen its last run.
So now the Silly Silo and the log ride are geographically very close together. And is this the space that will be used for the new roller coaster?
The space where the log ride is now is where the new Monster roller coaster will be.
And now Adventureland hasn't really participated in this kind of roller coaster arms race that a lot of amusement parks have been participating in over the last 30 years
really
or so.
Haven't. We're a family-owned amusement park. We don't really get into that biggest, baddest, fastest of anything. The real problem with that, other than the incredible amount of money that you can spend on a roller coaster ride, is that you're only the biggest, baddest, craziest anything for 1 year. And then, somebody comes out and goes to top that. What we're really going for at Adventureland is a full array of rides that everyone in the family, there's something for the three-year-olds, there's something for the teenagers, there's something for mom and dad, there's something for grandma and grandpa. So we don't generally try and get into the biggest, baddest, craziest of anything.
Now, that said, this is a big, bad roller coaster.
We're pretty impressed with ourselves, I think. And I think it was one of those things where we started one place and we just kept going a little further and a little further. And while it's not the biggest, baddest, craziest roller coaster in the world, for middle of Iowa, I think it's going to be pretty darn neat.
All right, well, describe it for us.
Well, it's a 5-inversion coaster, so you're going to be upside down 5 different times during this ride. But you're going to start out scared right from the get-go. We have a 90-degree lift hill, so straight up into the air, 133 feet. That's taller than any roller coaster we have here at Adventureland. And then you're going to drop at actually 101 degrees. So it's actually going to curl back in on itself. And that's the steepest lift drop anywhere in Iowa and the surrounding states. So for the Midwest, we're going to be pretty good for next year. And then it goes about 65 miles an hour, so you're running at highway speeds down this. And it's got a couple interesting features. One of them is this negative G-stall loop, which is the only one in the Western Hemisphere right now, where it's actually a typical loop on a roller coaster is more teardrop-shaped, and this is a little bit wider, so you get that kind of floating, falling, stalling feeling going around it. It should be really, really exciting.
So this roller coaster costs about $9 million,
yes,
which is a huge investment for Adventureland. Does this signify kind of a change in business strategy? Are you trying to attract people from farther away?
No, I don't think it really. We've always just wanted to be the best amusement park that we can be for our customer base, which is truly Iowa and the nearer side of the surrounding states. If we get some people from outside of that, you know, we're happy to welcome them. Come on over. But truly, we think that that's our core audience. But sometimes it's fun to look a little bit further down the road and think, you know, this is something that people are going to be able to enjoy for years to come. We hadn't put a roller coaster in for an awfully long time, and the technology has changed so much in the past years that it really gives us the opportunity to, for although a big investment for Adventureland, still on roller coaster standards, not the $35, $40 million you've seen with some big corporate parks.
Well, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about the nitty-gritty of this roller coaster with a representative from Ride Entertainment, the group that developed the roller coaster. But it's being built in Germany, and I'll talk with our next guest about that a little bit, too. But when all the parts are brought to Iowa, what's the timeline?
Well, we're retiring the log ride, like I said, on Labor Day. So we're hoping to get the groundwork done here still yet in the end of September and October before it gets, you know, as you know, Iowa winters can get awfully cold awfully quickly. So we're hoping to get that groundwork done and start construction just as soon as we close for the season in September.
Now, this is such a big roller coaster, such a tall roller coaster. It's really going to change the skyline of Adventureland, isn't it?
I really think it will. And we chose a pretty bright green for the track, so I think you'll see it from a distance. Between that and the storm chaser that we put in 2014, I think the bright colors ought to attract a few people. But it's really going to be a difference in that center of the park, and we're hoping that people love it.
Adventureland has changed quite a bit in recent years. I mean, the log ride was there when I was a kid, and a lot of people, when you go to Adventureland, you get that sense of familiarity, the rides that you remember and love, like the tornado, for example. But can you give me kind of an idea of how the park has evolved in recent years?
Well, just in the last, say, 10 years, you know, obviously one of the biggest things that we've done is dip our toes, so to speak, into the water park land and added Adventure Bay, started that in 2008 and completed that up to now in 2012. So we have a full water park now with Adventureland 2, which on these hot days like we've had the last few have really been wonderful because now there's a reason to come out to Adventureland when it's 90-plus degrees rather than thinking, oh, my gosh, the last thing I want to do is wander around and stand in line for rides when it's 97 degrees outside. So the water park addition over the past, you know, 10 years has been a real boon for us, and I think for our guests as well. We charge one admission to get in, so it's two parks, one price, and that's kind of been the trend in the industry lately, that people have started doing that rather than separating them out. And I think that it's really been nice for our guests and our season pass holders especially to be able to come for a couple of hours, come see both the park and the water park depending on the weather. And, you know, we have put in some new rides. Like I said, technology has been jumping by leaps and bounds over the last 5, 6, 7 years. And so we have gone into a few more technical rides, you know, like the Storm Chaser and now the new Monster, rather than some of just the plain flat rides that we have quite a few of.
And have you seen season ticket sales rise with the advent of the water park? Is that something that's bringing people back more often?
Oh, yes. And I think we've also seen a rise in the number of times each guest uses those season passes. Because on a hot day like, say, over last weekend or even yesterday when it was, you know, upper 90s, if you want to come out and stay for an hour or 2 hours and then you're kind of done for the day, you can. Whether that way, if you just had a ticket, you might feel like you needed to spend the entire day just because that was your one chance to go. But season passes are really, we started them later than most people, I think, you know, maybe about 15 years ago, and people really seem to love them.
Have you also seen a change in how long people are staying? Of course, you have a hotel, you have a campground. Are people coming in and staying for a couple of days instead of making it a day trip?
Absolutely. People are coming in. We always say that Omaha is really our best market outside of Iowa. It's a large population base, and it's close enough that they feel like it can come anytime, but it's far enough away that if you do stay till 10 o'clock when the park closes on a Saturday night, you probably do want to stay overnight and maybe do it again on Sunday. So, yes, the water park definitely has made it an experience where you can spend 2 days, 3 days, and take your time, go through the park, and really enjoy yourself.
Now, you've been nursing the log ride along for a number of years. Obviously, you were nursing the silly silo along and until it expired. Are there a couple other older key rides that you're having a hard time making sure you have replacement parts for?
Not at this time. Right now, we've got a pretty good handle on the log ride. Was really, I mean, it was one of the first rides put into Adventureland in 1975, so just the second year we were open. And like you said, they were right across from the Silly Silo, but that was more because that was as big as the park was back then, you know, so some of the older rides were in there. But everything else seems to be doing okay as far as the older rides go. And a lot of the other older rides we have are quite similar to newer rides that are out now that can kind of make that adjustment with them.
What kind of feedback have you been getting from people? Now, like I said, I've seen a lot of people bemoaning the loss of the log ride, but what kind of things have you been hearing?
Well, of course, there's always going to be that real passionate fan base for some of those older rides, and we understand and appreciate that. If we could save the log ride, we would save the log ride, but it's really one of those unfortunate realities that it is time for it to go. Not by our own choice, but just from its mere age and maintenance issues at this point. But outside of that, I think that people are really excited to see something like this monster coaster right in the middle of Iowa. You don't necessarily have to go to a bigger or more urban area in order to get that really wild thrill of a steel roller coaster. We're going to have it right here in the smack dab in the middle of Iowa.
Are you a roller coaster fan?
I am. It's my number one thing to do when I come out here.
And what's your favorite coaster at Adventureland right now?
My favorite is probably the Tornado. Go back to the old wooden classic, but I'm really looking forward to seeing something just a little bit more extreme out here at Adventureland.
All right. Well, Molly, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you very much.
Molly Vincent is a spokesperson for Adventureland Park in Altoona. And, of course, they will be installing a new $9 million roller coaster in 2016 called The Monster. We'll find out more about that roller coaster in just a moment. And then we're going to talk about the business of roller coasters, theme parks, and amusement parks. We'll also talk about the psychology of roller coasters and find out why some of us love that simulated near-death experience and others of us do not. We also want to hear from you. What are some of your favorite roller coasters? What are some of your favorite amusement park memories in Iowa? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about roller coasters. We'll find out why those who love them, and what makes a roller coaster great. We also want to hear your roller coaster memories. And of course, this conversation was inspired by the announcement of a brand new roller coaster being built for Adventureland in Altoona. When it is complete, the Monster will be a 2,500-foot-long roller coaster. It'll reach a top speed of 65 miles an hour, include a 133-foot vertical lift hill followed by a 101-degree drop, steeper than any ride in Iowa so far. Maybe the most extreme roller coaster in the Midwest. And with me is Adam Sandy. He's the Chief Business Development Officer for Ride Entertainment, the group that developed this roller coaster. Adam, when an organization like Adventureland comes to you to develop a roller coaster, what goes into this process?
It can happen a few different ways. In the case of Adventureland, they really were talking with us and the company we work with, Durslauer, and they said, you know, we haven't put in a roller coaster in quite a while. We want something big, different, marketable, and to be a great ride. So they really came to us and just gave us some parameters on cost and capacity. that really gave us carte blanche to design whatever we wanted to.
And Adventureland, as we've heard, hasn't really gotten into this kind of arms race mentality with other amusement parks in the Midwest or in the rest of the country, building the biggest, the most extreme, et cetera. But this kind of sounds like maybe we are now.
It's going to be pretty impressive, but I think it's also kind of, if you look at their coaster lineup, it complements everything they have, because they've got two great wooden coasters, the Underground, which is kind of a wooden coaster dark ride, and then the Dragon, which was kind of a typical 80 looping coaster. So really, it's going to be a big thrill ride, but it works really well with everything else that the park currently features.
And when you're in that development process, do you look around very carefully at the other roller coasters that are within driving distance to make sure that this is going to be something that will attract people?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was part of our analysis in our presentation to them, was really just saying, you know, looking at World of Fun, Six Flags St. Louis, Valley Fair, and the other properties, and saying, what do they have? And when we come up with something, what do we offer Adventureland that's different from all those other people, to make sure what they have is regionally marketable, locally marketable, and something different and exciting.
Now, this roller coaster is an incredible investment, about $9 million, and it's actually being built in Germany. What are the logistics of building a roller coaster in Germany and then installing it in Altoona, Iowa?
A lot goes into it, but Gerstlauer's built well over 50 coasters now on every continent, so they do have some experience with it. But what we do is we do all the columns and track work in Germany, and then all the Gerstlauer's a little different, because all their electrical components, like the lift chain motor, the brakes, and other things, are all pre-wired and tested in Germany. So all that's done there, then we put it all in the containers. This will be about 40 or 50 40-foot containers, and ship it by sea to an eastern port and then truck it all into Iowa.
So will it actually ever be fully put together in Germany when it's being built?
Various components will be, but it'll never be fully assembled.
All right, and then it gets assembled here. What is that process like?
So we try to ship everything as best we can in sequence of erection. So, you know, we'll start with the big lift tower, because that's the best place to start on a ride like this, and then work out in either direction from there. So start with the lift tower and components and start with that, and then have the rest of the steel arrive probably in direction of travel after that, so working our way through the course. But we will have some unique elements to work with, like the negative G stall loop. If you look at that element, it's the first time we've done that in the Western Hemisphere, and there's just a lot of column and track steel all around that.
So okay, let's explain for people who don't know what the negative G stall loop is. I mean, this is a slower loop, right?
Yeah, it's a bit slow. Not really slower. The difference is, if you look at the top of it, you know, in a traditional loop, like kind of right next door to Adventureland is the Dragon, which features what we call a clockoid loop, and that almost looks like a teardrop. And so you're really at a constant speed through there, and it's always varying track angles. Here we actually have several feet of straight track at the top of the loop, so you essentially have some extended hang time while you're upside down. So you really get to savor it instead of just speeding through it.
You know, I'm feeling queasy just thinking about it. I'm not sure I want to savor. But so when I'm sure that there are other mothers like myself who are listening to that and thinking about those 10 airtime moments that are involved in the 133-foot lift followed by a 101-degree drop. So that's, you will be beyond vertical when you're coming down. So almost upside down, but not quite. What about safety when all of this is getting put together? How is that? I mean, I'm sure that you have looked at it, and the engineers have looked at it and projected how it's all going to work. But when you get it put together, how do you test it?
The testing process goes through a few phases. I mean, so you have kind of, when you erect it, you know, just some standards for concrete and steel and other things. And then also just with the electrical systems, control systems, there's a whole commissioning protocol that goes with it. It's not a turn it on and it runs process. It takes weeks to get everything wired and tested and go through all the protocols that come with a ride, especially at this side.
It's slated for 2016. Once those parts arrive here in Iowa, how long does it take to put it all together?
For something of this size, the general goal is about 2 months of steel erection. And then once that's about halfway done, because we're going to do, like I said, the lift tower first and get some of the station and brakes done. So once we're putting steel up on the other parts of the ride, electricians can come in and do terminations and other things on those component-heavy areas. So looking about 2 months for that, and then it'll probably be about 2 to 4 weeks of commissioning.
All right. So that's something that a lot of Iowans will get an opportunity to watch happening.
No, definitely. And with it being 130 feet tall, you'll see the lift tower go up really quickly. And I think they're going for like a neon green, bright green for the track, so it'll really pop out.
Sure. We'll be able to see that from Interstate 80 for sure. Yeah. Are you going to come and ride it?
Definitely, definitely. I'm going to hope to be there a few times during construction and then definitely on opening day.
All right. Adam, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
Adam Sandy is the Chief Business Development Officer for Ride Entertainment. That's the group that developed this new roller coaster. And now we're going to talk about roller coasters and amusement parks more generally. We also want to hear from you. What's your favorite roller coaster? What are some of your best amusement park memories? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Are you excited about this new roller coaster? My next guest is Tom Schreier. He's an associate professor of hospitality management at Iowa State University, and his specialty is the study of theme parks and amusement parks. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Now, earlier in the hour, when I was talking to Molly Vincent from Adventureland, we were talking about how Adventureland is kind of a regional park. So it draws people from Iowa and maybe from a little bit of Nebraska, a little bit of Illinois, a little bit of Missouri, people who aren't that far away. But a roller coaster like this one seems like it may be designed to draw people from a little bit farther away. How big of a role do roller coasters play in bringing people in the gates?
Well, roller coasters do play a big part in the industry. They're a major component to a lot of parks, a lot of regional parks and larger parks. They have a tendency to bring people in from all over the region. Now, when something new like this is added, as you mentioned, this does have a draw from a little bit larger market. There are groups of people who are interested really only in riding roller coasters. There's actually organizations, the American Coaster Enthusiasts for one, is a group that specifically focuses on riding new coasters, roller coasters in different regions. So anytime a park opens up a new coaster, there's always this draw from specific people who just want to ride this new attraction.
Right. There are even bus tours that travel around from park to park for roller coaster riding, right?
Correct, yes.
So were you surprised when you learned that Adventureland was putting in this big of a coaster?
This big of a coaster, yes, it was a bit of an interesting bit of news when I first heard it. They were due, shall we say, for a new attraction, although they did just get the Storm Chaser just last year, was installed. But yes, for this big of an attraction, it is a big investment for the park, but hopefully it should pay off in the long run for them in terms of increased attendance and revenue.
And do you, how long do you feel that'll take?
It could vary. It depends a bit on if they do decide to increase park ticket admission and so forth. But generally speaking, anytime a new major attraction is installed, the generally accepted return on investment, somewhere around 3 to 5 years. Usually what's seen when a new large attraction is installed, within the first year, they'll see about 35% increase in terms of the impact of the ride. So over the expected lifespan of that ride, about 35% of the people will come to see it just within the first year. Then as time goes on, within about that five-year period, it's drawn about 90% of the ride's total impact. So by about 5 years, most people have seen it, been on it, so around that time is usually when it's about paid off for, or in terms of bringing in new attendees is a about where you start when to look putting in new investments.
Now, you have made a study of amusement parks and theme parks. You've traveled around. You spend every summer traveling around, right?
Usually, yes. You know, one of the good things about being a professor is I have the summers off. So I do spend time going around to different parks, different areas, riding roller coasters, but also actually doing real research, trying to figure out, you know, why does people attend parks, what can increase parks revenue, just the various factors that make theme parks successful.
And you draw a line of distinction between theme parks and amusement parks. Can you define that for me?
Sure. There is a difference. Now, overall, the entire industry is really referred to as the amusement park industry. But within that, there's actually different segments. If we were to truly break this down, a true amusement park is simply a collection of rides and attractions that are there for people to enjoy, to come and have a enjoyable day, to spend the day, have a good experience. However, a theme park is really a park that has focused on creating specific elements, have certain rides that are grouped together that sort of have a story, a theme, if you will, along with them. A classic example of a theme park would be something like Disneyland, where there are actually different themed lands around, which each section really tells a story and has a backstory that's trying to be told to the general public.
All right, and an amusement park would be more like Six Flags.
Correct.
All right. Where does Adventureland fall?
Adventureland is a interesting case. They are somewhat on that borderline. Overall, yes, it's a collection of rides and attractions, but they do have certain areas that have some theming to them. You know, their Main Street area, obviously, when you first walk in, it is themed a certain way to have that particular feel. Also, they do have different named areas around the park. If you ever look on their guide map, there are certain areas that are actually grouped together to have rides of similar look. Overall, though, it is a collection of rides and attractions, but they have tried to theme some parts of it.
Now, as you have spent many years studying theme parks and amusement parks, what kind of evolution have you seen? I mentioned earlier the sort of arms race between different amusement parks to get the biggest, baddest roller coaster. But what are some of the other changes that you've seen?
Well, there definitely has been a race for coasters. But really more, there's been a race for thrills and entertainment. Technology has played a big part in that. Going based from the standard flat rides, which would be things like a scrambler, a tilt-a-whirl, things that really just stay on the ground, they're relatively flat, up to larger rides that really get off of the ground, lift people up into the air, things like that, and then we evolve into coasters, things like that, where really give people that thrill. Now, once we hit that point, we started to see technology then in the modern era take over a little bit, or rather supplement some of that thrill experience that people would get with roller coasters. So we're really starting to see an evolution of using motion simulators, things like that. But motion simulators really will never really take away the full effect of what a true roller coaster would be.
So you're talking about like a motion simulator where basically it's a virtual reality experience. You're in a car or something like that, and it's moving around, but you're not really traveling through space.
Correct, yes. It's basically you're seeing a large video screen in front of you. Some of them are 3D, where the entire attraction, you're almost like you're in a movie theater to some degree. The seats and things are moving around and it's synced with the screen movements.
And I can see that being really attractive to parks because it doesn't take nearly as much of a footprint.
That's true. It is a smaller footprint, as you said, and it can be a less expensive of an investment, so it doesn't cost nearly the $9 million that a new roller coaster would, but it is still a significant cost. What's interesting, though, is that we're actually starting to see to some degree in the larger parks, in the bigger destination parks where people go specifically as the theme park being their whole vacation. In those larger parks, we're actually seeing a marriage somewhat between the simulator technology and the roller coasters. So there will be video screens associated with track movements and so forth. So people are actually physically moving around, but yet they're getting that virtual environment that you just couldn't get if you were outdoors on a large coaster.
So it's almost like a Space Mountain, which is an older version of that in Disneyland or Disney World, but brought to a whole new level with modern technology.
Yes, to a certain degree, yes. There are new parks, for example, in Orlando Universal Studios. They've got their new Harry Potter rides and things like that that really combined this whole simulated motion with real motion.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Tom Schreier. He's an associate professor of hospitality management at Iowa State University, and his specialty is the study of theme parks and amusement parks. When we come back, we're also going to explore the psychology of roller coasters and find out why some of us love them so much. That's coming up in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Every day, it's getting closer, going faster than a roller coaster. Love like yours will surely come my way. Hey, hey, hey. Every day, getting faster. Everyone said, go ahead and ask her. Love like yours will surely come my way.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about amusement parks, theme parks, and roller coasters. And you are welcome to join the conversation. If you are a roller coaster fanatic, tell us why you love them so much. Tell us about your pinnacle roller coaster experience. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me is Tom Schreier. He's an associate professor of hospitality management at Iowa State University. His specialty is the study of theme parks and amusement parks. And also joining us now is Zlatan Krijan, who is an associate professor of psychology at Iowa State University, to help us understand why some people love roller coasters so much. And Zlatan, people love these things. I mean, some people refuse to get on a roller coaster, but some people just cannot get enough of this experience. Why is that? What is it that a roller coaster ride does for people?
Well, first, let me say hi. And that's a fascinating question. I mean, all of us get bored, and all of us want to switch things up now and again. But it seems there are people that really like to push this boundary of seeking novel situation and seeking these intense experiences. And going on roller coasters is one good example of a way to do that when sort of regular things are not enough.
All right. And so if you're looking for the thrill, what is actually going on in your body when you're on a roller coaster? Because I think that in many ways, roller coasters really simulate terrible danger.
Absolutely. I mean, physically, it can be a very distressing activity. The sensation of falling, for example, obviously being jerked back and forth. I mean, just anticipating the roller coaster ride has its degree of excitement by looking at the huge structure and seeing how high you're going to be, etc. And it looks there kind of the two dynamics that really underlie why some people are more drawn to things such as roller coaster or skiing or even firefighting. One dynamic seems to be this novelty seeking, right? So research with both animals and humans have shown increased basically interest in exploration, in novel situations, in situations that have uncertainty and thus can carry some risks, yet with that they also bring excitement. So it's this kind of a pull by these novel situations. I also want to note that it doesn't have to be physically dangerous and threatening. I mean, certainly that's one way to get these thrills. But research that has looked into what kind of occupations, for example, people high in sensation or thrill-seeking tend to prefer or tend to end up in, has shown that these do include sort of physically dangerous professions that you would associate with things such as enjoying roller coaster, being part of a rescue team, a race car driver, but can also include professions such as being, I don't know what that means for me, but psychologist or psychiatrist or even a social worker.
Really?
And what's important to note that those professions, for example, may involve dealing with people that have difficulties. They may involve a lot of uncomfortable situations that often involve a lot of uncertainty. They may be high stress, right, compared to some, let's say, more well-regulated, structured office occupations that may take place in a cubicle. So it's this kind of preference for uncertainty and for novelty and intensity that is critical to understanding the personality differences, and preferring roller coaster is sort of one expression.
Would riding roller coasters or participating in other thrill-seeking type of activities, are they, in a sense, kind of a self-medicating experience? Is this something that people do to get that adrenaline rush to make them feel better?
Absolutely. That's part of that dynamic, this exploratory dynamic that I just described. But there's also another aspect, and that is the breaks that you have. So a lot of these situations, I mean, roller coasters can fit in here as well. I mean, they're supposed to be very safe, right? And they generally are. But there is sort of always that thought of potential risk. And certainly sporting activities such as skiing and parachuting carry potential, even severe physical risks. So for sensation-seeking individuals, we have learned that they have a muted stress response to potentially novel and threatening situations. And it's that muted stress response that's evident, for example, in low levels of a stress hormone cortisol or less overall arousal in such a situation that allows them to explore things that a lot of other people would simply be too anxious to do.
Do you like to ride roller coasters?
I have been known to do that point again.
Well, and Tom, I know that you spend a lot of time on roller coasters, but you actually didn't like roller coasters when you were younger, right?
That is true. When I was young, I really did not enjoy them. I have a few memories of being quite terrified and my parents dragging me on roller coasters and screaming the whole way. Interestingly enough, I do enjoy them now.
Interesting. What changed, do you think?
Well, part of that is from when I was in somewhere around middle school, maybe early high school. I was in the band, and we took a trip to Kings Island, which is in Ohio. And part of that, you know, being a young kid, I was dating a girl in the band at the time, trying to impress her. So I decided, yes, I will go ahead and ride this coaster with her. The whole time standing in line, I was in my mind, I was freaking out, but there was no way I was going to actually show that to her. But actually, I did get on the ride, survived it, and from that point on, I started to enjoy coasters a bit more until now I just love them.
That's so interesting. Well, and do you find, Zlatan, in looking at the research about why people like roller coasters, is there sort of a bell curve? I can tell you I used to enjoy them a lot more than I do now. At 40, I kind of don't like having my neck whipped around like that so much. Do people enjoy it more in their 20s, say?
Absolutely, and we find that the overall level of sensation seeking tends to decrease as people age. Talking about these changes in preferences or how does one go from not liking roller coaster or to liking them, or at least from hating them to tolerating them, has a lot to do with the social process and peer influence. So we tend to be with other people that share our, roughly share our levels of sensation seeking, right? Because they'll mean that we enjoy sort of similar activities. And if there are slight differences, they can really sort of move people. I mean, we often look to others to appraise the level of threat or dangers, or how worried we should be about something, and also how exciting something potential is. So if you're around other people who don't seem very concerned about doing an activity that may seem threatening or potentially dangerous, that certainly will make us more likely to engage in it. And certainly if we survive it, as Thomas said, they will... One is good, so maybe another one will go just as well.
Well, and roller coasters, with the way that they've changed, I mean, Tom, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. When I was a kid, roller coasters were exciting and fun, but there weren't upside-down roller coasters until I was a little bit older. And then the loops got to be really popular, and the sense of danger, at least, rose. And now we're talking about this new roller coaster at Adventureland, where it simulates the feeling of falling out of the car while you're upside down. So I mean, this sort of escalation of the sense of danger has been going on, Tom.
Mm-hmm. And that's very true. It's got a lot to do with the technology that has developed along the way, not only technology in terms of electronics and things, but also in terms of construction material, things like that. There's newer ways to build coasters, utilization of different materials. So initially... yes, a roller coaster was, you know, up and down hills, and that was what was available. As the building technology evolved, there has been this ability to make steeper hills, loops, you know, turns, various other aspects, and still keep it at a relatively safe level. There's lots of things that have to be considered in there in terms of G-forces and how it feels on the human body. But yes, as the industry has evolved and one manufacturer will utilize this new technique, then in order to basically have a bigger and better attraction, another manufacturer has to come out with a new way to experience those thrills and even bigger thrills.
Well, and Zlatan, I mean, does the thrill wear off for people? Because you were talking about this love of the novelty, the attraction to this new experience. So if I ride a roller coaster for the first time, that will certainly, the novelty will be there. If I ride it again, I'm going to be less surprised.
Yes, and you know that does happen. It is just the case that generally, you know, going on rides is not as frequent, where that tolerance would build up to where it would be like completely boring and uninteresting. But certainly, I mean, if you do it a lot, you will try to find some new ones, perhaps more dangerous ones. I would also like to add that in terms of, you know, marketing and this sort of, you know, ever increasing level of, you know, danger or excitement associated with the kind of new models and these new technologies that we just heard about, there's also this social aspect kind of competition and, you know, going for a big adventure and being able to tell people that you've done that. So there's kind of that aspect of it as well that motivates people to go on a roller coaster that is quite different of maybe sort of personal sensation seeking and these kind of more physical aspects we talked about.
Well, and Tom, we were talking earlier about how the use of virtual reality is pretty attractive to amusement parks. It does seem to, I think, have a different psychological effect. I love those rides that feel, you know, like you're really moving around, but I know that I'm perfectly safe the whole time. And I can imagine that the real thrill seekers would not get enough out of that experience.
Yes, it is a different feeling. It's a different experience. When you're in an enclosed room with simply bouncing around and moving back and forth, yeah, it does have a different feel than if you're out in the wind, you know, the wind blowing in your face, you're feeling yourself actually go up and down the hills. So it does draw a slightly different crowd, but still... people who ride roller coasters often will also ride the simulator type rides, although the reverse is not always true.
And Zlatan, do we see any kind of correlation between people who love roller coasters and say people who watch horror movies who are just looking for that shock value, that kind of a fear factor?
Yes, there definitely is a correlation. So, you know, a typical item that you would have or a question on these questionnaires that would assess thrill-seeking and sensation-seeking tendencies would be something like, I'll try anything once. So So I think that encapsulates very well this, the kind of both the novelty and the possibility for having something new or potentially dangerous, but certainly preferring potentially, you know, dangerous sports. There's even research showing that people higher in cessation seeking are more likely to kind of ignore speed limits or kind of drive in a risky way for fun.
Do you see opportunities, Tom, for with the use of virtual reality and the use of all of this technology, do you see opportunities to make a roller coaster feel different every time?
Well, there are rides that do have variations in them. Rides combined with simulation technology that do have different experiences. For example, if you've got a video monitor in front of you, then theoretically it's relatively easy to change the story that's being told, to change the attraction in and of itself each time. A prime example would be for Disney World and Disneyland, there's a ride that's called Star Tours. They have updated that ride. It used to be the same story every time, but now every time you get into it, there's the possibility of having a new experience because they've changed the computer technology in that to basically show a different movie each time at randomly.
So you can ride it again and again for the first time.
Yes.
with all of these rides getting more and more technical and more extreme, also, of course, amusement parks are spending more and more money on them. Is this still a strong economic model, Tom?
It is, in terms of if you have a large base to draw from. What's interesting is in the last several years, we have not seen really any new large parks being built, and part of that is because of the economy. The parks that are currently existing have begun to undergo an expansion, and they are starting to invest again in their new technology, their new rides. But as I said, in terms of brand new parks, we're really not seeing any of that.
Well, and the initial investment to build a brand new park seems unfathomable.
Correct. It is very high.
So do you feel like maybe we've reached saturation level with amusement parks? These are the parks that we're going to have, and they're just going to keep on changing and evolving over time?
Well, it does have somewhat to do with how the economic situation goes, but for the current moment, yes, the parks that we have are probably where we're at for a few years. We're definitely not going to see any large Disney-style parks or anything like that anytime relatively soon.
What's your favorite roller coaster?
Well, I don't really want to say there is any one particular favorite roller coaster, any one particular ride, because they all have different aspects, different a feel to them. I do enjoy more suspended coasters, more coasters that give you that feeling almost as if there is no track, you're sort of flying. There are winged coasters and things like that.
That sounds terrifying too. That's great. How about you, Zlatan? Do you have a favorite thrill ride?
There is one in California, the Six Flags. I'm not sure, was it called Magic Mountain, or maybe that's the Disneyland one. But it did involve, I think, three axes of rotation, as well as going down the track.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom Schreier is an associate professor of hospitality management at Iowa State University. Zlatan Krishan is an associate professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Talk of Iowa is produced by Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Neppe.